Dignity Day India.
So the young global leaders, they come, they talk to school children like you, and they try to understand what it means to lead a dignified life. Because everyone in the world has a right to live a dignified life, isn't it? Whether he's poor, rich, black, white, illiterate, literate, rural, urban. So do we really follow that? Should we follow that?
Yes,
we should. Then when we say it's important that all of us should lead a dignified life, what does it mean? Do we have certain behavior? Do we have certain principles to follow? Or should we behave in a certain way? Should we have a certain attitude where we can say, yeah, okay, I'm leading a dignified life? How can I say that I'm leading a dignified life? I'm dignified.
So would it be correct to say that the basic principle of leading a dignified life is to be happy?
Okay.
Being happy in what you are doing, what you are, to helping others, happy that others are there around you. So would it be correct?
Yes and no. If you're happy because you're making money because you're manipulating poor people, then that's not good. If you're happy because you're living a life that is full and well-rounded, and you're giving as you're receiving, that you are trying your best to serve your community, to lift people up, not to hold people down. If that's the reason you're happy, then good. Remember this example we gave about Adolf Hitler and Martin Luther King Jr. Both of those people were leaders. Both of those people were visionaries. Both were charismatic. Both had a following. But that didn't mean both were good. You follow me? Yeah. Suji, what's an example in your life of dignity? Either a decision you had to make, or a situation, or a problem, or a challenge, or experience. Is there anything you can think of that that conjures up in your mind this example of dignity? And if you need to think about it, I'll stall while you.
I think what dignity would mean to me would be, you know, I should not only have the courage to stand for myself if wrong is being done to me, but also for my neighbor. If a wrong is being done to my friend or my fellow, anybody, you know, I should have the courage to stand up for him and let the person, and tell the person who's doing wrong that I'm sorry. Because you must have read that quotation which says that if your house is, if thief comes to your house, if a thief comes to your neighbor's house, don't just sit quiet about it, because the next house might be yours. So you should have the courage to stand up for wrong and, you know, tell people that I have a, you know, like there's a very renowned writer called Nyanla Wanson who says that treat yourself as an individual worthy of respect and ensure that everybody does the same to you. So that would be dignity.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, yes, please give her a round of applause, very nice. I told her that she is brilliant because she paints pictures with words. She's very good at that. During the reign of Hitler, most Germans were not part of Hitler's reign. They were not Nazis. Most Germans just sat at home and did nothing. Now, if they sat at home and did nothing and didn't know about it, and there are many people who didn't know what was going on to the Jews, the Holocaust, then obviously no harm. But if they knew about it and decided to sit on their hands, says, hey, it's not me, it's not my cousin, it's not my family. What did she say? If it's not, today it's your neighbor, but tomorrow your neighbor is you. And we must understand that we all inhabit this small planet and that we are all connected. And what happens to your neighbor will happen to you. And the universe has a perfect accounting system, and whatever goes around comes around. And so if you put out good things, you'll get good things back. You put out bad things, you'll get bad things back. You know, a lot of friends where I grew up, in a very tough neighborhood. I grew up in a place called South Central Los Angeles. It's near Compton, California. It's near Watts. Unfortunately, you have heard of these places probably because they have a big reputation. And TV shows have been made about places I grew up at. But unfortunately, not for good reasons. I'm trying to change that, by the way, with my work at Operation Hope. But because I don't see these communities as slums. I see them as lands of opportunity. I see them as places where capitalism has not yet made it. I see them as underserved. I see them as a place where entrepreneurs are yet to be born and dreams are yet to be realized. I see them as sort of a reservoir for the nation to lift up and to leverage this unleveraged human capital. And so I see it as a positive. I don't see these communities as a negative. But the Bible says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And a lot of people I grew up with did not have a vision for themselves. And they did not have positive role models. They did not have a Sujit coming into a classroom to teach them about dignity. And so nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be dumb. I want to be stupid. I want to be a criminal. I want to be a rapist. I want to be a murderer. You know, people want to feel good about themselves. But if you don't know better, you can't do better. You okay? You all right? Me get you some water? You okay? Now, why did I stop my presentation to ask if she was okay? Right. Now, do I know her?
No.
No. But I feel like I know her now. And what happens to her is important to me. And it's more important that she's okay than for me to make sure the presentation is unencumbered. We've got to care about people like that. That's our connection, is a sense of genuineness and authenticity and the fact that we are all family. Unfortunately, in the communities I grew up in, there weren't people asking their neighbor, are you okay? There weren't Sujits coming in to classrooms and people who can paint pictures with words coming into classrooms to inspire us. So a lot of the people I grew up with ended up in prison, probation, and parole. Or worse, dead. Because they made bad choices. Now, they chose to steal, they chose to rape, they chose to maim, they chose to murder. Not because they're a dumb person, not because they're a stupid person, not because they're a bad person, because they don't know anything else but that experience. They don't have any role models around them that are positive, that are successful, that are showing them a different way. So they emulated the bad things around them. Well, what did I say? Whatever goes around? So when you murder and maim others, what happens to you?
That's the end you need.
You murder and maim others, you get murdered and maimed. And so, unfortunately, it also translates, if you rape others, you end up growing up as a rapist, unless you learn to heal. If you do a study on people who rape, you'll find that they were raped. You find a study on people who hurt, you'll find that they were hurt as a child. All right? So somebody has to break the cycle and to create a new model. So whatever goes around, so you want to put positive out in the world, because what do you want to get back? What do you want to get back?
Positive.
So you just don't do good because it's the right thing to do, because, oh, that's sweet. No, enlightened self-interest says if you want to live a good life, a healthy life, a positive life, a spiritual life, you want to put good things out there because you want to get good things back. So it's selfish. There's nothing wrong with that. Because if it's selfish, it'll keep you focused. All right? You may do charity every now and then when you have time. But if it's selfish to you, if it's in your self-interest to be a good person, you'll do it every day. It'll be the way in which you live your life. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's very important that you understand this in your gut, in your spirit, at a very basic level. That this is about the way in which you choose to live your life.
Some people do charity just to show fame that we have so much money, and we want to give charity so that
community.
Well, and it's very interesting. Now, you know, when they're doing that, you know they're doing it for credit, right? Right? You don't feel as, you feel, oh, that's nice, but. Am I right? You feel, that's nice, but we know they're not doing it for the right reason. So they don't really get all of the credit. You don't think, oh, that's Martin Luther King Jr. Oh, that's Gandhi. Look at, you say, ah, that's a rich person trying to buy themselves, some credit. So no one's fooling you, okay? So you're really making the point that you've got to do it for the right reasons because it's the right thing to do. And if you do it for the right reasons, the right thing to do, the more you give, the more you get. If you do it for the right reasons, you'll get credit that you didn't ask for just because your spirit was, people can tell people's spirit. I mean, my guess is you can tell a lot about me without, we just met, but you can probably tell a lot about me. You feel like you know me maybe a little bit. I feel like I know you. And I look in your eyes and tell. You feel like you know Sujit. Eh? You can look in his eyes and tell. So it's, you give yourself more credit for being smart. And what you just said, that some people try to buy themselves into heaven, basically. I mean, who are you fooling? You're not fooling God. You know, you can't write God a check. You know, so this issue of dignity is at the core of our humanity, and it's the one thing that everybody in the world agrees on. Now, let me give you an example of how you can, as leaders, redefine the future. And then maybe Sujit has this example of in his life of dignity. He can share. If you are giving money at a charity for the wrong reasons, you see a beggar on the street corner, you give them, some money, or you give them some dollars, or you give them rupees or whatever. So you feel better. You feel better than. You don't just feel better. You feel better than because look at what I did for him, right? Now, but let me ask you a question. Beyond the fact that it's sick to want to feel better than another person, beyond that fact, have you really helped?
No.
So is dignity giving a man a fish, or is dignity teaching a man how to fish?
Teaching a man how to fish.
And if you can teach a man how to fish, or a woman, can't you teach them how to own the lake? Own the city. Run the city. In other words, it's not about a hand out, it's about a hand up. So dignity applies in a very practical way. I want you to think about this. It's very practical. If you want to do charity, if you want to help other people, is dignity going and giving people a bunch of handouts and having them say, oh, thank you, and then tomorrow they're hungry again, begging for more? Is dignity begging? If somebody's begging all the time, are they living a dignified life? So you want to, yes, you want to feed them so they're not hungry today, because if somebody's hungry, they can't listen to you. But once they, the stomach muscles are okay and they're fine, now you want to focus on, let me teach you. Let me help you help yourself. Let me help you learn how to help yourself so that you don't have to beg anybody anymore. Which is dignity?
Helping make his life better.
Right. Why? Why is that dignity? You're not dependent on anybody else for support, acknowledgement, respect, integrity,
confidence in yourself,
food for your children. I mean, it's disgusting. If you've got to, in order to feed your children, you've got to go beg some stranger to give you. That's disgusting. That's not right. So we should be empowering people to be able to live a dignified life. Does that mean everybody wants to have a mansion? No. Does that mean everybody wants to have a jet? No. Does that mean everybody wants to run a country? No. If you want to live in a little hut, but make sure you have no needs and be a poet, fine. Everybody gets to choose their own path in life, but it should be because of your choice, not because of your circumstance. You follow me? If you choose you want to make two rupees, fine. You choose you want to make 10 rupees or 100 rupees. But you should be able to succeed or fail based on your own merit. So that's one example. Let me give you another example of dignity. Politics. In World War II, Japan and Germany attacked the United States of America. Okay. And the United States of America and several countries got together and we pushed them back. We won the war. What did we do after we won the war? It's okay if you don't know the answer, by the way. Very few people know the answer. But what did we do after we won the war? You said we celebrated? That's an interesting response. Well, actually, we did celebrate a little bit. But what else?
We made an organization called the United Nations. And it sure doesn't
happen. That's actually true. But what was a step? That's actually very good, but radical. But radical has no self-esteem problem. I keep calling her radical. She says, that's not my name. I know her name. That's my nickname for you. It's radical. Forever, I'm going to call you radical. I will know you for 20 years, and I will say, how you doing, radical? So you get used to it. So before the UN, but after the war was over, what else happened? Again, it's okay if you don't know, but try it. Try to think, rack your brain. There were some sanctions. You're getting close. It was called, I'll tell you, I'll give you a hint. What was created, it started with an M. It was called the something plan. What? What'd you say? What'd you say? Go, say it again. No, say it again. You're right. Marshall plan. You accidentally hit it right on the head. It was called the Marshall Plan. Never be ashamed to open your mouth. I mean, the only bad answer is the one they never suggest. Success in life is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Never feel bad by trying and risking and pushing. It is nothing bad about trying. In America, there's a baseball player named Hank Aaron. He had the record for the most home runs for many, many, many years. But he also had the record for the most strikeouts. Huh? Most people don't know this. Abraham Lincoln. Somebody said Abraham Lincoln was a great president, right? Abraham Lincoln was an utter failure till he was 47. He failed at everything he had ever tried till he was 47 years of age. And then he succeeded. So you don't hear about the failures. You only hear about the successes. You know, Nelson Mandela was not president until he was 74 or 75. What happened the first 75 years, you know? He had failed at a lot of different things. He was in prison for 27 years. You know, Moses didn't even have a purpose in his life till he was 80. So never, ever, ever give up, and don't think that when you make a mistake that you are a mistake. Now, the Marshall Plan. The Marshall Plan was basically America's commitment to rebuild Germany and Japan. Now, this is amazing now. Somebody has bombed your house. Come in and bombed your house, killed your relatives. You bomb them back. When you bomb them back, you then go and rebuild their house. Sounds screwy, doesn't it? Why did they do that? Well, one thing, it was the right thing to do. The people of Germany, the people of Japan, not the military, not the leaders, the people had nothing to do with the atrocities of the leaders. So America felt it was unfair to penalize the people for the decisions of some of the so-called leaders. So we thought it was the right thing to do. It was dignity to make sure that we replaced that which we destroyed. Some of it. We bombed people. People died. And America has heaviness on its heart for innocent people who died. But the structures was all rebuilt, okay? Now, that's a nice story. It's very sweet. It touches your heart. Guess where two of the largest economic trading partners are today with the United States of America?
Germany and Japan.
Japan and Germany. Japan is the second largest economy in the world. Germany is one of the fifth largest economies in the world. And every you see America, now when you watch TV now, when you see America doing anything, our allies For the last 40 years, 30 years, our allies have been Japan
and Germany.
I'll tell you some place else that we helped to rebuild. The most money that the World Bank has given to any country is France, because France was completely destroyed in the war. We've helped to rebuild France. We also defended France. Guess where one of our largest economic trading partners is? France. Well, in the UK too. Guess what country always tries to align itself with America? France. So you can't have a friend unless you're going to be a friend. All right? So sometimes dignity should also make good sense. What I'm saying is dignity is good business. That if the poor don't have running water, the poor don't have cell phones, if the poor don't have housing, if the poor don't have entertainment, then somebody can make a lot of money providing entertainment, providing housing, providing transportation, providing water. I'm not saying do it for free, because nobody wants a handout. You see what I mean? People want to take care of their responsibilities. When I was driving, we were driving here on the corner, we saw a guy selling just little things. And I pointed and I said, that's an entrepreneur. Now, maybe it's just a little cart, you know? But, you know, have you ever heard of Walmart? The company, sir? Hey, Walmart's one of the largest retailers in the world today. Maybe the largest retailer. Well, this is a guy named Sam Walton. This little backwards white boy from the South in America with a high school education driving a pickup truck had an idea about how to serve the poor. And he started this little company called Walmart. It was a little store about as big as his room. And now they're the biggest retailer in the world. So anyway, I'm going to stop now. But I wanted to give you some practical examples that dignity is not just a feel-good. It's not just a spiritual place. It is a way to live. It is a way to operationalize your life. It's a way to live in your family, with your friends, with your career, in your business, in your spiritual life. There's no reason why you can't have dignity in every aspect of your life. Last example. I have a theory, and I've been pushing it with my friend Sujit and all the friends at World Economic Forum. I have a theory that you cannot call yourself a leader unless you're prepared to serve. Now, some leaders would think I'm stupid for saying that, because they're up here, and they, you know, like the fact that other people are down here. It makes them feel important. But let me ask you a practical question. And then, again, I know I'm boring you, so I'm going to shut up. How much time do we have, Sujit, by the way?
Half an hour.
Okay. So and you're thinking about your example, right? You got your example. Okay. So let me ask you a practical example. You have a guy who flies on his jet to some developing, flies on his jet to India, gets off the jet, gets in the limousine, goes from the limousine to the Taj Hotel. They take him up to the Taj Hotel in his suite. And then he goes from the Taj Hotel with security to down a corridor to a conference center. And he gives a speech for the World Economic Forum or any other conference. Make sure I'm not picking on the, I'm taping this. Make sure I'm not picking on the World Economic Forum. On any conference, he gives a speech on poverty in India. Is he going to be very good at giving a speech on poverty in India?
No.
Has he seen poverty in India? He saw it on the way from the airport in his limousine. But if he's going to try to make money, if he's going to try to build a marketplace in India, he's going to try to, I mean, there's 300 million middle class in India, but you know, there's 900 million poor people in India. So if you're going to do business, you've got to be able to understand all of India, yes? So how good will a business executive be if he's never talked to anybody who's Indian, gone to a community from anybody who's from India, gone to the slums, gone and talked and listened to the people he wants to serve? Is he going to be any good at as a business owner?
No.
Let's give another example. You come to India and you come to a school the day before the World Economic Forum meeting, and you come and talk to some young people in India, who grew up here, who live this place, who know this place, whose family's from this place, who are proud of this place, who love this country. And you stop and you shut up, because God gave you two ears and one mouth, so you listen twice as much as you talk, and you listen and you say, tell me about India. And then you look in the eyes and you talk to them and you build a relationship. and then you go out to run a business. Who's going to have a better ability to understand the best way to serve India and the best ability to make money? The person in the limousine or the person coming to the school?
School.
Now, it just so happens the person coming to school is also giving dignity. And it just so often happens the person coming to school is also leading by serving. So you can do well and do good. You can do well by doing good. They're not mutually exclusive. Okay. So now, Sujit.
So one question I have, like, one element which is lacking in this world is trust.
Yes.
Trust. We don't trust anyone. Like, I think it's especially in our country, like, what we notice is, like, you can't keep the door open. Of course, you can't do it in any country, but over here, you can't walk alone in the street in the night. You can't go to any dark places. You can't just be on your own. Why is it so? What can we do? So, like, it feels so helpless. We all are human beings.
You remember the story I told about the taxi driver?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think that was an accident that happened to me. I think that God was trying to tell me something. So because that taxi driver treated me that way, I then in turn treat other people that way. Do you know, whenever I go to any country, the first place I leave, when I leave the airport, I think I'm the only person who's gone to Paris, arrived in Paris, France, and asked to be taken to the poor slum areas, not to Paris. And the driver was like, are you sure? I said, yeah. Every time I go to a country, I want to go to where the poor people are. I want to understand. I have never in 15 years of going to the poorest, roughest, most purportedly crime-ridden communities, I have never been robbed, mugged, had anything stolen from me. I've never had a problem. And I think it's because of my spirit. It's my energy. Now you can do stupid things. You can leave your pouch in a car. You know, you can entice people. I mean, people are desperate. They're going to do things to take care of themselves. But as long as you're just, you know, you have reasonable precautions, I think that I'll give you one last example. There's many people in LA who are afraid of gang members. I don't know if gangs are a big problem here, but they're a big problem. Are they a big problem here, gangs?
Yes.
These are youth gangs? Yeah, so in America, we're the same thing, youth gangs. So a big guy, double my size, walks down the street, and because he doesn't have Sujit's title or my position, he only has, you know, his muscles. So he's going to scare you, and that's his power, his ability to scare you. So most people they see this guy, they run across the street. Well, he wants you to run across the street. That makes him feel powerful. Now, or you look at him and you turn away. Now he's upset because, well, why are you turning away from me? You're de-dignifying him. What I do, big guy, walk in front of me. When I get about as close as I am to you, I look at him a little bit, turn my head, what's up? What did I do when I did that?
Interacted with him.
Right. And why is that important to him?
Because everyone's scared of him.
Yeah.
Because of his
It's sneer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, no, actually it's worse than that. It's worse than what you said. You said that he's used to people having people run away from him. It's worse than that. He's used to having people ignore him. He's invisible to the world. Nobody pays him respect. Nobody pays him attention. Nobody cares. The only way he gets attention is to use his muscle. The only way he can get any kind of respect is to scare you. No one gives him any dignity. No, everybody wants to feel that they exist. What did I do when I looked him in the eye and acknowledged him? What did I do?
You made him realize who he is was the world, he is present.
And when you make something human, when you make a human interaction, is it harder for the person to hurt you? Think about this now. You got somebody who wants to rob and maim you. Is it easier if they don't know you at all? You're just faceless, nameless, they never met you, shoot you, take your money. Or if I've made it a human interaction and now you feel something from me, is it harder? So what I'm saying is, and every time I'm in the community, that's what I do. I find the toughest guy in the group, the toughest guy, look him straight in the eye. Hey man, what's up? How you doing? I'm doing well. How you doing, man? It's all good. Good to see you. Thanks for, now I'll ask him some stupid question, where's the store or something. And I give him respect. And I may even, if I'm feeling comfortable, I may even shake his hand. Now, I'm dressed with my suit on, and I've got my briefcase, and he thinks I'm important. But I've just given him the same respect and accord I give to the President of the United States. That's all he wants. That's all anybody wants. That's all anybody wants. They want to be acknowledged. What makes you hurt when people don't acknowledge you, when they don't accord you, when they don't give you respect, when you don't feel like you exist, when you don't feel like you matter? Then you feel lost. Yeah? So why is it any different from a gang member? So I guess the short answer to your question is, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be tough. You're going to have to make judgment calls. You can't be stupid. You can't just kind of go out there, I want to trust everybody, But women have something that men don't have. They have women's intuition. And women's intuition is God speaking to you and through you. You just know something. You know when you meet somebody who's good. You know when you meet somebody and they're bad. You can't tell why, you just know. Is that right? Right? Use it. Men, you have something called a gut feeling. And it's the same thing as women's intuition. You know if in your gut feeling. When you're doing something, when you're stealing something, you know it's bad. At least the first time. when you do a good thing for somebody, you know it's good. You know it here. No one has to teach you. So follow that, and you'll always be okay. But when you have a positive experience, build on the positive experience. When you have when somebody does a good turn to you, do a good turn to somebody else. Pay it forward. And then whatever goes around, that's it. Sujit.
How many of you have been to a jail or a prison? Inside a jail or a prison?
Well, that's good.
We celebrate the Independence Day on the 15th of August and the Republic Day on the
26th of
January. So there is a group in India. Their job is to go to jails. They have branches all over India in different cities, even in small towns. Their job is to go to these jails and prisons on these 2 days particularly, and the 2nd of October.
Gandhi Jayanti.
Exactly. On these 3 days, with food baskets, with sweets, with small gifts, and go and spend half a day with jail inmates. This is what they do. I had the honor and opportunity to be a part of one of these jail visits. In 1994, when I was 19 years old. So I went there, this was 26th of January 1994. I went there, you talk to everyone, you sing songs, the inmates, they sing songs, we hoist the flag, as usual, as you do in your school. And there was an inmate, he was sentenced to 7 years in the prison. And that was his first year. He was sentenced in 1993, he was convicted. And that was the first year he was serving. And somehow we just started talking and we had a bond. He was 2-3 years older to me. He was like 22, 23 at that age, at that point. We started having a bond together. He started asking me what I was doing. I was just enrolled for my engineering then. And then we formed a bond. I asked him why he was in jail. He said, okay, that's your decisions. Then when we started talking, I asked him, those were the days when computers were extremely rare and it was a privilege to learn computers. And he said he wanted to be a computer, he wanted to start his own computer business once he comes out of jail. And that was 7 years after. He will be coming out of jail in 2000. And he told me in 1994 that he wants to start his own computer business. I was very, very surprised and very fascinated. And because I was enrolled in the engineering course, I did my electrical engineering.
Mm.
So I said, wow, he is understanding the importance of computers, because we were talking about computers,
mm.
computers, all this. The sole aim was to get out of the engineering school and get a job in a software company.
Sure.
So after that, I came back. We spent about 2-3 hours, half a day. I came back, and then one of my friend's father was a jailer in a different city. So I contacted him through my friend, and I said, can I anyway have access to this person? He was the jailer in a different city.
Mm.
So he said, okay, I'll try, but you know, jail manuals have restrictions, and I'll try my best. It took him almost a year before I could be allowed to go back to the jail again to meet this person. In the meantime, I didn't go to any other jail visits. Like, I went in 26th of January, I didn't go on the 15th of August because of classes and all these things. But after 1 year, I went to meet this person. And that was his second year. You know, he had completed second year, it was the beginning of his third year. And then we started talking about computers, and I said, okay, very good. I was in the third year of my engineering then. So I said, we are doing all these courses, and I'll be happy to give my books to you.
Mm.
But the thing is, you cannot do practical computer training, but at least this will generate some interest in you.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, I went to visit him almost on an average once a month.
Mm.
And he came out in 2000. I had completed my engineering then. I joined a software company. I had left it then. Then I had gone into politics in 2000. I was briefly dabbling in politics starting from 2000. So he came out in 2000. And then he started.